Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live the good life and create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social conscious and unconscious dynamics and desires. Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Edgy Ideas podcast. Today, our very special guest is Tatiana Bakirova. Tatiana is the Professor of Coaching Psychology in the International Centre for Coaching and Mentoring Studies at Oxford Brookes University in the United Kingdom. She supervises doctoral students as an academic, and Tatiana supervises human coaches as a practitioner. She's a leading scholar in coaching psychology and has been exploring such themes as AI in coaching, the deeper purpose of organizational coaching, what leaders seek to learn at work, and critical perspectives on neuroscience of coaching. In over 80 research articles, she has addressed the most challenging issues in coaching today. So Tatiana, you're very welcome to Edgy Ideas. How are you today?
Good. Thank you, Sam.
Good.
Looking forward to our conversation right now.
Me too. We spoke a while back and we've had lots of interactions in the past, but it's been a while, so we have a lot to catch up on. So what's at the top of your mind when we're thinking about coaching in the world today?
I kind of, most of the time I speak now, people want me to talk about my concern about AI, but it's not AI that is a problem. What I actually saying that I wouldn't mind if AI could sort out some of our problems. We have lots of them, but interestingly enough, it's actually more or less a solution in search of the problem. That's AI.
Say some more. What do you mean by that?
All right. Okay. What I see that the coaching world has changed and it's changed. It's supposed to change properly because the world has changed and the coaching is supposed to adapt, but it's not adapting. It still talks about kind of aspirations and ambitions and progress, which is not what is apparently in the world. So thinking it's quite well behind. And I see that some desperate events means to bring some innovations, but they are not sorting our problems. Like neuroscience doesn't sort our problems. AI doesn't sort our problems. And that's why it's a little bit sad when we put so much of attention to something that is so marginal.
Yeah. It's very refreshing to hear a fellow voice saying the same things as I'm thinking. It's a relief. Yeah, there's so much attention to it, and it's a diversion from the real challenges. So when you say coaching is not progressive enough and not answering the real questions we're facing, say some more about that. So say what you think the direction of travel should be.
Yes. First of all, I don't see that we are right now, it's a right thing to talk about the ambitions and progress because the world is more like in a survival mode. I see that there is, when we were before, it was of more, better, and that's how the coaching fit into the agenda with the aspirations. Now it's actually how to deal with less, how to make sense of decline, I would say. How, in some cases, how to survive. In other cases, how to resist what is going on. So how to deal with divisions in the world, which are so apparent. And I think we in coaching don't look at that. So the purpose is still old one. The purpose is still kind of everything should be wonderful and we need to focus on success.
Yeah, and in that sense, coaching becomes part of the problem, doesn't it? Because it just, you go into an organization, you individualize the issues, you look at it in a behavioral way, you think about performance, you think about growth, and you're totally ignoring the bigger picture. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's a huge problem.
It is. And I think we need to, I would say, sort of revisit probably, and I wrote it, review and commit, the purpose of coaching, just to actually even think, okay, what is it for? And in some way, I gave example what I would like to see, more attention to is simply what is meaningful project for people, rather than some sort of constant transformation or whatever it's called.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the work I'm doing is, our diploma of coaching, we think very much about the ecosystems coaching sits itself in and the context. And we really make connections. You know, the individual is important. The individual actor, of course, is important, and their emotions and their subjectivity. You know, we work with that, but then always making connections to relationships to the other and relationships to the wider environment, the social issues around them. And it seems to me that that's unusual. Very few people are making those connections.
Yeah. And I think there is an interesting argument about that, which is quite difficult. It's sort of people don't want to bring activism into coaching, which is fair enough. But I would say it's not that you replace the focus of the client onto something that is meaningful to you as a coach. I just mean, what you need to do in coaching is just to expand the context of what they want to deal with. And when you expand that context, it's still the focus on what is important to them, but at least they really need to know what is the background to it. Okay, what are the issues?
Yeah, I mean, organizations are not closed systems. They don't operate in isolation from society or from the challenges faced, you know, and nor do individuals. And it is to kind of widen that context, like you say. I think people get very mixed up. They, you know, they make claims like coaches are neutral. And I always say, well, we're never neutral. We all come with social, cultural agendas. You know, we're all kind of part of the context we were brought up in. And coaching is particularly not neutral in the sense it's very individualistic focused, and it makes certain assumptions about personal growth. But neither are we activists, you know, so we don't jump in. I mean, some coaches may have a banner saying I'm an environmentalist, and if you want to work with me, you know, that's a choice that the client can make. But generally, like you say, it's really expanding the that focus, and that it's breaking the taboos of saying, like, let's look beyond just your very limited personal growth issues or personal performance issues. You know, that can be important. We can manage that, but let's look at that within the context.
Yes, with the consequences, with implications of that, absolutely. And I also kind of, I don't want for coaches to feel that they minimize the importance of even of the individual goals, okay? Because if it's people are in a survival mode, you have to help them to survive. Exactly. And right now, I see also, and it became one of my topic recently, that organizations were always regulating identity of coaches. Okay? And it is not Simon and Alvis and Tam identity regulation. I just see coaching is one of the perfect instrument for identity regulation. Apart from the normal means that organizations use, coaches sort of work it. It's all for you, but can you see there is a gentle move into what the organizations want? But at the same time, coaching could be a very good means for resisting identity regulation. And good coaches, they do that. They actually see we are manipulated. We are kind of, they want us to more or less sell our soul to the organization to commit fully. But you have to make your mind, you have to see a little bit wider than this and to be develop your own mind.
Yeah, no, we're very, people are very caught up and they're very conformed by organizations. You know, the culture is designed to conform you in a certain way so that you're hyper productive individual and you don't ask too many questions.
Exactly.
And this happens even at very senior levels. And I've been working, my work's been very interesting. I've been working in Silicon Valley data center companies. I've been working in humanitarian organizations. And in a way, they're all facing similar struggles. And identity and belonging is a big part of this. How people, yeah, and many, there's a lot of dissatisfaction in work. There's a lot of people feeling colonized by work, but they can't escape it and trapped by it. There's a lot of, a lot of dysfunction in the workplace I'm experiencing at the moment.
Yes, Absolutely. And actually, this is one of the themes that, in addition to expanding the context for CLI, I actually see part of our function right now in this declining world is to make people much more aware of the dysfunctionality around them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, rather than just putting your head down and keeping everyone busy and trying to survive it, or to actually change it. Yeah. It's have you done some work on a new vision for coaching, or is it just in your mind at the moment? Have you done some writing or some thinking with others on it?
We did a good piece of research that you referred to in the introduction about what is actually people discuss in coaching, because that was the reasonably new approach to research. It's not about outcomes of coaching. It's not about the process of coaching. It's exactly what topics, what people want to bring. And I think it was a good piece of research. There are now two papers published on that. And what we discover in a nutshell, which we knew actually all along, that it's not exactly what organization want. It's not exactly what is set up even in three-way conversation. So good coaching takes its own kind of pace. It's also get to the real needs of people, because they bring something what they want to discuss. And one of the kind of striking, although not very striking, was that to start with, most of the leaders even concerned with confidence, their level of confidence. And eventually, because we looked at the dynamics of these themes, eventually these topics become less and less prominent, which is good news. But they still, by the end, really want to talk about themselves. It's what their identity, what is important to them, what are their values. So, and of course, there is the topic of the what is expected, like organizational issues, like the strategic thinking and the communication with stakeholders. They're all there. But what was more noticeable in these dynamics is that focus on themselves.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because that supports my understanding. I mean, I remember when I first started coaching is at Lancaster University, and I moved in from the world of therapy to coaching, and I had a mental model of coaching, and it's like, I mustn't be a therapist. I must really focus on like the strategy and the business. And, you know, I'm dealing with very important executives, and I had all these ideas in my head. And yet the way I work, of course, is a very well-trained listener. My skill is I'm a psychoanalytic listener. I listen to people. So I create a space, and I sit in a space, and I hold a space, and I'm not jumping into a coaching toolbox. I'm just holding a space. And in that space, people spoke into it. I mean, I called it the coaching confessional in my book, because people just really want to talk about themselves, and they really, they don't get many opportunities, even in family situations. Everyone's busy, or it's, they're not sure whether they should share this. But in the psychological safety of a coaching session, something almost magical happens, actually, that a space occurs where people really feel that they can talk about their identity, their belonging, their anxieties around confidence, all the issues you just said, if you hold a space open for it.
Yes. And that's, I would say, that's normal. That's kind of what I would say organizations have to provide, because strictly speaking, if they want this loyalty, if they want this commitment from people in terms of their psychological contract, what can they give instead? I would say exactly that. Complete, unconditional opportunity for development.
Yeah. No, that's good work you're doing, Tatiana. I'm glad you're doing the research. I write about it without doing the hard research hours.
But I have to say, recently, all kind of my research effort, unfortunately, went into something that appeared from nowhere. I really hated to deal with the AI issues, okay? But I get so annoyed. I really get so frustrated with what is happening. And that's why we wrote the paper with Rob Kemp. One of the things which I thought, okay, I can understand that people need to innovate. But in order to call something coaching, you at least need to know what are you can compare it with this text. So we put together six characteristics of essential characteristics of coaching. Interestingly, a lot of these AI developers and advocates, they were arguing with us. They said, oh, you are doomers and blah, blah. Nobody argued with these characteristics, but it's so obvious that none of them are met by AI coaching. None of them.
Yeah, no, I think people get very muddled in their minds around it. I think when I'm working with an AI company, they read all my coaching books and they did some real deep research and they got very interested and they wanted to take an ethical position. But what they do is they use AI in a way I think is very helpful. They think of AI as a systems tool because it can, like you can, you know, for me as a coach, if I take 100 coaches into a company, I can get some very valuable data on what's going on in the company, but that's very expensive. You know, AI can get some of that data and we can understand what's happening in the company world, but it's not coaching. It's doing something else. And as long as you understand it's doing something else, it can be quite useful. And if you think carefully about what it's doing and how you use it, and it can do one thing, it can get some systems ideas about what's happening in the wider system. You can scale it. You can study some language with it, you know, but it's not coaching.
It's not.
And that's a mistake people make. They think these human bots are humanoid.
And sometimes people argue, okay, we don't own the term, okay? And it's fair enough. Although, can you see some companies, they still fight for the title. Like, you wouldn't sell champagne anymore. It's only sparkling wine. They call, and when I say that if they call it AI coaching, it just tarnishes the human coaching. They say, oh, no, look, there is the people sell, for example, flat-packed furniture, but it doesn't tarnish the good carpenters and everything. But it's clever, but it's so wrong analogy. Can you see?
Yeah.
Analogy of something that you don't even need some special experience of. Because you can go and see in any shop the fantastic handmade furniture. But in coaching, because of its unusual setup, you really need to experience in order to know what you get.
Yeah.
And people who didn't experience coaches, they can't make the distinction. It's misleading. It's actually misleading.
Do you think that this AI coaching movement will be a real challenge to human coaches? Or do you think that human coaches will just be, because they're human, because we do something very different, do you think that it will continue and it will people kind of realize that there is a difference over a period of time? What's your thoughts on how it will progress?
That's a good question. Right. But let me just start from somewhere else. Okay. First of all, just to say where I see the problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Because when people just say, oh, we introduced this lovely question make device. Okay. And whatever you call it might be useful. That's fine. Okay. It's not a problem. The money is where the real human coaching is replaced. Because that's what going to be developing, because organizations buy that. And I would say it is a big problem. It is a big problem because, can you see, it's organizations who always want to be economical. They offer that to people and then they don't and save on real developmental opportunities.
Yeah.
It's also a problem because it creates even more inequality. Again, it's a good kind of high level of echelon. They will have normal coaching. It's only the rest of people will have this ersatz. And what is the problem? It's problems for education as well, because can you see, they are now celebrating this AI coaching can pass the lowest competences, okay? And people and coaches are, oh, hooray, why are you celebrating? Because even, let's just imagine, even this is now kind of that level of coaches are replaced. How can you prepare coaches for a next level?
Yeah. Well, one of my critical perspectives on coaching is that coaching itself, at some levels has, I think you began by saying this really, is misses the point or does something it shouldn't be doing. So One of the problems I think is that coaching, when it gets reduced to competencies, to behaviorist type approaches, to very kind of shallow ways of behaving, it mimics machines more than humans. So I've always been a critique of some of the coaching professional bodies because they push you towards goals, they push you towards individualism without making connections to the context, without doing the systemic work. Yeah. I think AI mimics that closer. So if you reduce coaching to 10 basic kind of approaches, AI will be able to mimic that. If you think of coaching as something much more complex, much more nuanced, much more kind of human, then it can't. So I think coaching is, I'm hoping that it will kind of push coaching to really like review itself and think about kind of what human coaching is and what human coaching needs to be for 2025 and the future.
It's a hope, Simon. It's a hope, but I'm not sure that's what is going to happen. Okay? What I see that people introduce as sort of what real coaches should do by those who develop AI coaching, it's still so low. It's just, oh, bring a little bit of more humor, pay more attention to the body language. It's not happening, okay? Or at least it wouldn't, right? What I'm really worried, okay, and that is on a psychological level.
Yeah.
Because with this movement, it's not that they are kind of, on one level, they say that AI coaching is getting better, all right, and you get better. What is actually happening? It's getting better because it's actually replicate what we can do. So we are not that special. We are not that special. Can you see what they are saying? That coaching anyway, algorithmic, all AI coaching is asking better questions. So they are more or less denigrating the quality of humanness in the relationship, relationship. And when this happens, what is happening? It's the people who are no good, okay? AI is becoming better, more kind of in all sorts of ways. People lose trust in themselves. They lose confidence in themselves. So that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. One of the things in organizations for many years, has been how people struggle for autonomy, to find their own individual place. We've talked about this before around how organizations make you conform. And there's people thinking about how you humanize organizations, how you make them more human. And more kind of relationships and connectedness is really important. Belonging are kind of such important themes in society. And as you know, young people growing up with AI, with kind of social media, and they're getting reduced to kind of screens and machines for their relationships. There's got to be a backlash to this, I think. And I think this is where coaching needs to really make a stance. If it doesn't, then it gets subsumed by the machine.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm actually advocating now, defending humanness.
Yeah.
Because if we look at even on the wider scale, it's a little bit scary. I started watching and reading in relation to that, everything. It's really scary because we are getting stupider with AI.
Yes. Yeah.
And noticeable because people kind of, and it's not about coaching now, it's in principle, okay?
Yeah.
They trust more, and I'm not talking about that's what is happening in institutions. Educations will be affected dramatically by all use of these large language models, because people don't trust what they say. Okay, they put something as their argument. They can't recall the argument practically afterwards. There is already the research that shows it. So we are not generating knowledge. Okay, we are more or less losing knowledge with that. Plus, Plus,
there you go.
It's not even knowledge, okay? Oh, you got me going. Sorry, Simon.
I mean, it diminishes the capacity to think. I mean, this is, you know, at the heart of it. You know, if you need to think about something, you learn to press a button and you get an answer from the machine. And that was happening before AI, you know, with each kind of generation of technology. And now, I mean, I really noticed it. you know, I work with very bright people. I'm, you know, senior leaders, big salaries, and you know, they might speak three languages, be scientifically brilliant, you know. But the capacity to be a critical thinker and to reflect on things in a different way is being reduced, and you feel it in organizations.
Absolutely. And you know why? Okay. Because what it produces, because people look at it as a search engine. This is not a search engine.
Yeah.
Okay. What it actually produces, it's something plausible rather than true. Okay? And people start trusting it and lose actually trust in what is real. You see?
Yeah.
Huge. It's a huge thing. And I, if you look at it, what is happening in this regard, and some important people like Daniel Dennett, you know, the philosopher, he was said that it's an opening door to manipulation. Because if we lose the trust of what is and how it can be checked, what is true, we will be so easily manipulated by machines.
No, absolutely. I noticed it already. I mean, you know, I play with ChatGPT like everyone else and see what you can use it for, what you can't. But it's, for me, being a critical theorist and critical thinker, like you put something in and it responds to you with a majoritarian, usually American viewpoint. It kind of like it gives you the baseline of what you know, because of course it does. That's the data it's got. You know? That's the mass language stuff it studies. That's where it gets its data from. Yeah. So it gives it back to you in that way, you know, and it kind of it tells you almost that you're thinking in the wrong way, and it has a corrective to try and make you more positive. It's like psychology makes you more kind of like, yeah, it kind of shapes you without you knowing it, unless you're really aware.
And more than that, okay, that's Shannon Lalo is making that case. You, all of what is there, it's the past.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the past. Okay.
And
the world is changing, but we are led by these things that are fully past based.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's a very important point. What do you think? You've written something on neuroscience as well, critical perspectives on neuroscience. Tell me something, how you think, what's your thinking about how neuroscience fits into this picture?
Oh. Okay, where shall I start? Look, I'm not against neuroscience. And at the same time, that when I'm critical about positive psychology or AI, okay, or anything else, I'm not against any of this, okay, in principle.
Of course.
I'm just only saying it's the use of it, it's what we make, how we sell it. And because coaching nowadays is practically merged with marketing. Okay? So because it is a very competitive area, everyone shows something and try to demonstrate their kind of special angle on it or particular skills. And that is a lot of lies, okay? Because strictly speaking, neuroscientists themselves, they would not sign under the claims that coaches make about that. That is in principle. And also, kind of, although we deal with individuals, you never can actually sort out anything, as you said, on the level of individual brain, because it's all happens in the relationship, in context, which neuroscience cannot deal with.
No, I wholly agree with you. And like I said, I'm not against science or neuroscience either, but the way it's used as a kind of pseudoscience to sort of promote your you know, and people seem to think that if you preempt your sentence with neuroscience says,
exactly,
or you know, you validate it, and everyone's scared to say anything different because that must be true. And it's I recently spoke at, I don't often go to coaching conferences these days, but I spoke at a British psychology society. They invited me, and I said to them that the use of the term evidence-based is so overused. Because, you know, we all support evidence-based when it's good evidence, when it's thoughtful evidence. But it's so, you know, there's so much pseudoscience used and neuroscience used in the wrong way. You know, and once people say evidence-based, it's like, okay, well, that's a fact. Well, no, actually, we need to question where that evidence comes from. Is it really good science? You know, and And it was interesting that a lot of people in the room actually clapped. It was like they were pleased to hear someone say it out loud.
Yeah. That's actually the only things that makes me joyful in relation to all of this. The more kind of outrageous my critique becomes, the more people want to talk to me.
Yeah, that's good.
I know. And I want to say that as well. It's a kind of everything what we are covering is what is actually suggest that the field need more critical thinking. And not just even critical thinking. I call it criticality. I'm now writing a book, Simon, which is already nearly more than a half way on. And it's called Criticality in Coaching. They ask me, Criticality in Coaching, A Path to Discernment. And that's what I would believe would be my contribution to what is needed in for coaches now.
Very good. So tell us what you mean by criticality. How do you tell my audience what that means for you?
Okay. Just only in a simple way, okay? Because I see it's different from the critical thinking, because critical thinking is just usually understood only as skills, okay? It's a kind of what's wrong with your logic, okay, with your rationality. I see it much more than skills. I see it as a philosophical stance, even. It's a position, okay, of questioning everything, okay? It's accepting human beings as fallible. And then it could also be seen as a capacity that develops through time. It's not easy, but you can put some effort into it. And then it is activity and skills. Okay? And so what I do in the book, I first describe how these terms are different, like criticism, critique, and criticality. And they are quite different because there are kind of a lot of nuances to say about that. So I kind of differentiate it very carefully. And that's why people sometimes, the word critical, and they kind of shy away. Oh, I don't want to be this type of person. But it's a slightly different thing, and I hope it will clarify the concepts.
Well, I look forward to reading it. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. My books on leadership and coaching and mentoring are published by Sage, and they suggested that I call them a critical text. I said, well, that works for me because I'm a critical theorist, so, you know. And again, the critical theory is different from critiquing, from being critical, you know. Sage said to me, but you won't sell many copies because people don't like the word critical.
Oh, wow.
So I said, thank you very much. Yeah, but I mean, for me, critical theory is all about, it's about questioning kind of normative assumptions. It's about it's about questioning power relationships. It's about when you think of the other thing I put in my critical theory is emancipatory thinking. So thinking which kind of works towards human beings being more human, being more autonomous. Do you think that as well in criticality? Is that
yes, it is. Absolutely, okay. Yes, it is. But I just want to add one important element, because although the critical theory deals usually with a really good focus on the context, okay, and what is happening kind of in the environment, criticality for me is also recognition of human fallibility. Okay? It's actually looking at in what perceptions we are limited, okay, how our thoughts, our capacity to think also depends on our own limitations. And it's in combination with this that criticality becomes unique quality.
Yeah, now that's interesting. Like for me, in my work, I'm just trying to make sense of it. In my work, I say I bring together critical theory, and my psychoanalytic stance does what you just said. It asks humans about, you know, we're our unconscious works in different ways from our conscious and our limitations and things. Yeah, so these things coming together are really important. So I'm delighted you're writing that book. That's good. When's it coming out?
My submission date is 1st of April. It's not a joke. but I guess it will be like by the end of the year. But it's with Routledge. They are pretty kind of prompt usually after the submission.
Good. Yeah. Good. We're coming towards the end of the podcast. Anything else on your mind around coaching before we we come in? Anything we've left out which is important, you think, to think about at the moment?
I kind of just simply want to say the last things about our approach, okay? What we see, that what will sort our problems, okay, is, and people usually think it's innovations that will sort our problems, but I would say it's innovation doesn't actually promise the progress, the real progress, because innovation, it doesn't, people who offer innovation, they don't talk usually about the outcomes, okay? They only talk about, oh, that's new, okay? That's fantastic. But if we think about real progress, we really need to ask end result questions, okay? And they are usually normative. They are usually connected with what we value. Okay? So that's what I want to talk now, kind of what do we value? How can we start rethinking that coaching is about in terms of values?
Yeah, well, maybe you and I need to get our heads together with some others and put together a conference, a meeting next year after your book comes out, and use that as a starting point for a criticality in coaching thinking and coaching for the future, because I think it's really needed, and I think your work is very important. So thank you for that. I always end the podcast with two questions. I don't know if you remember there. I ask my guests anything they think might help us reflect on what it means to live a good life and create a good society. Anything in relation to the work you're doing at the moment which helps us to live a good life and create a good society? Any thoughts?
I think I already said that. I kind of would want to support people to develop their critical abilities. Okay, so that would be my main message, and it's, there are lots of other things to say, but I now see it as a more or less a precondition in order to be able to see what is real, what is true, which is now so much muddled up.
Been lovely talking to you. Your work is very important, Tatiana. So keep going, and let's try and meet up in the new year and do something together. It'd be cool.
Wonderful. I would be happy to.
Right, you take care. Thanks so much for being our guest.